Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, Ivana Breen on what Gen Z need to know about skin, and there's education here for all of us. I meet Dr. Farah Maiden to hear why she made the move from GP to aesthetics. And yoga and meditation and mindfulness teacher Aileen Slane on what her rock bottom moments have taught her. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it has been a big week. This show turned 5 years old on Monday, which is quite incredible to me. I still think those pandemic years skewed things time-wise. But during that time, this show really anchored me by bringing me into town every week through lockdowns and whatever else was happening, keeping me focused and helping me, and I hope the listeners, to navigate a monumental time for health and well-being. I posted a video of my first ever Alive and Kicking opener on my social media this week, and it's mad to think how much has changed in such a relatively short period of time. Because in it, I reference, you know, the age of my kids, my dad, where I'm at in life and how I feel about health and well-being. And my sentiments remain the same 5 years on. But since then, my kids have grown so much. We've moved house twice. My husband closed his business. My dad died. My siblings moved away. And every week throughout it all, I have presented this show. Now, rightly or wrongly, I have only ever had this show covered by my lovely friend, Serena Bellissimo, the week my dad died. And to be honest, that wasn't even an easy decision for me. I think partly when you're going through something like that and losing a loved one, you're in a different realm of shock at what is really happening. But I honestly remember still being gutted that I wouldn't be discussing the chosen topics for that week, because I love this show. I love the subject matter. I love delving into what makes us do what we do, mind, body and soul, how we move through the world, the challenges we face and what is and isn't within our control. So thank you to all of you for listening, for emailing into the show, for coming up to me on the street and at events and telling me that the show has meant something to you over the years. All of you that I meet seem to comment on my health and wellness week and the honesty I show, which I promise will continue for as long as this show does, because life isn't perfect. It's messy, it's challenging, and all that good stuff in between. And trying to keep your health and well-being going through it all is a story that I like to tell from the heart. And speaking of heart, my sister is flying home from America with my niece and nephew this week, and we are heading to France for one night only to surprise my brother for his 40th birthday. So it's been a week of birthdays, a week of celebration, and it feels good to mark these moments in life. You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, anti-aging treatments are certainly not a new thing, but what is perhaps new is the current trend of adopting them while still in the prime of youth. For Gen Z, it seems to be a case of vote early and often when it comes to the use of things like Botox and filler. So should we be concerned? Well, Ivana Breen is clinical director at Ivana Breen Skin and Laser Clinic, and she joins me in studio now. Ivana, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me. And there is a big discussion, isn't there? I mean, aside from Botox and fillers, young people want skincare. Even my own 10-year-old has said, can I have skincare? I'm not sure I knew what that was at 10.
Yeah, and that's the issue. I think the children are being exposed primarily on social media, and it seems to be TikTok is the main culprit, the main platform that is the culprit. And they're being exposed to skincare routines and procedures that we would never have been exposed to at that age. So we didn't know what they were. So we didn't know to ask for them. But what is happening is they're watching their favorite influencers having these treatments done and going through these get ready with me videos, and they want to emulate that. They want to be like them. So there's where the problem is stemming from.
And how much skincare does young skin need, particularly active ingredients? I mean, my daughter will often look at me putting something on and say, can I get that? Or, you know, when I'm putting on makeup, and I let her play around and have some of her own bits of makeup.
Yeah.
But I'll often say, I'm actually only trying to recreate what you've already got with your beautiful cells.
Exactly, exactly. And there's the irony. You know, we're trying to get their skin and they're trying to emulate what we're doing. But it is a normal thing. Like, I mean, I'm sure you did it as well when your mother was putting on her makeup. You put on a bit of lipstick. That's all very normal. It's part of growing up. It's part of role play. But what we have to do is draw the line. If you think about skincare and children, you actually start taking care of your child's skin from the get-go, but you start using sunscreen on them when they're 6 months old. Then you're teaching them how to brush their teeth and clean their face. That's all health and skincare and skin health. So when we talk about skincare for children, there is a need for skincare in that they need to learn how to wash their face. They need to learn that sunscreen is important before they go off to school. And then when they start to get a little bit older and teenage years are coming in and hormones are flying, that's when blackheads and maybe the odd breakout might come out. And then they might need to look at introducing something like salicylic acid, but in a very gentle form. So really, in the teen years, they should be doing a cleanse and wearing sunscreen. And if they have any problems with acne, then maybe some other products. But that should be guided by a professional. And other than that, they don't need anything. So this thing of children getting upset because all their friends are getting these popular products that are being sold. And if you look at these products, their marketing is all lovely, colourful packaging that really appeal to children of a young age. So what I would say to parents who are concerned and want to, you know, give their children what they want, but also need to be a parent and not give them active ingredients like retinols and vitamin C's, that let them have a little cleanser, let them have a sunscreen. And that way they have a skincare routine and they don't feel left out.
Yeah. So what about Botox then and filler? How early is that anecdotally happening?
Unfortunately, it's happening earlier all the time. But realistically, you don't need to have Botox before the age of 30. The only circumstance that I can think of that you might need it before 30 is if you have those two lines in between your brows, the 11 lines. Sometimes that can make you look quite cross if it's hereditary and it's a genetic thing that you have this. So what that can do for somebody to have Botox in their early 20s to alleviate that, that can just make them, you know, psychologically, it's a thing that will work for them. So in that circumstances, yes, you know, having it in your early 30s, fine. But in terms of doing Botox as a preventative measure in your early 20s is crazy. You don't need to do Botox in your early 20s. You don't need anything like Botox before the age of 30. When it comes to fillers, in the younger age group, it's more about lip enhancement. It tends not to be about anti-aging with the fillers in that Gen Z age group. But lip fillers have their own, they bring their own problems as well, in that if you're constantly having lip fillers done, as time goes on, the filler itself can actually migrate into other areas of the skin and cause distortions within the skin. And what we're finding now is that where we always thought that filler would degrade after a number of months or years, they're now using ultrasound to show that fillers can actually be still seen in the skin 20 years later. So they aren't degrading in the way that we thought they were. So it is important that if you are going to undertake something like this, that you're going to a professional, you're going to somebody who is ethically going to do the right thing for you, not do this overfilling of the lips that a lot of people seem to like. There is two cohorts, you know, there's the one that like the overfill, and the other that like the subtle approach. But you really need to go to somebody who's qualified and who's able to deal with anything that might go wrong as well. And that will be a medic.
Is there regulation in the area, or can anybody inject?
Unfortunately, when it comes to fillers, anyone can inject. So I'm not a medic, but I can go and do a course and learn how to do fillers. Now, we can't do Botox because Botox is considered a medicine. So it has to be a medic to administer Botox. But unfortunately, fillers can be done by anyone.
Oh, that is scary, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
And I had a resurfacing treatment on my skin there recently and it was quite full on.
I was wondering why it looked so glowy. It looked amazing.
It was called Secret Pro and it was a GP who was turned aesthetics.
Yes.
And I was so glad she was a GP because it's full on. These treatments are full on. You want to have somebody that has a medical background and that has studied the anatomy. I think it's so, so important.
It really is, yeah. You have to make sure you know where you're going and who's doing the treatment and what the outcomes are going to be.
Yeah, and look, I'm sure there are salons where people are trained. It is a machine that comes with training, but yeah. I felt in very safe hands because it's quite sore around the eyes and she was able to say, I'll inject local anaesthetic. That will help you a little. And I was just so glad that she had a medical background. So look, I mean, I wonder, you know, do we know enough about all of these treatments now? You know, Botox, filler, as you say, more and more is coming to light now. Have we been using it for long enough or has Botox been used for generations at this point for other uses rather than aesthetics?
Yes, it has. And Botox has been around for ages. And the irony is that Botox is nearly safer than fillers are. You know, fillers, you can actually get necrosis of the skin where the skin tissue dies. If you don't know what you're doing, you can blind somebody. So it's, you need to be able to deal with these problems as they happen and not have to depend on somebody coming in after the fact. So, but with Botox, they've been around for ages. And with fillers, when fillers are done correctly, they are amazing and they are very safe in the right hands. And they can really, somebody who has a great aesthetic eye can achieve amazing results with fillers. But it's about going to the right person.
We're living in an age of not only looking to lean into anti-aging, but also in this sort of enhancement of what you've already got. I mean, my Instagram is filled with before and afters of famous people, of what they looked like before and after from, you know, all kinds of ages. And it does just do something to your brain that you think, oh, what if I did slim my nose down a little? And what if I did have a more enhanced jawline? And what if I lifted this up? And it just changes what's normal for us, especially with filters. We're looking for this perfect skin that actually doesn't really exist in real life. It looks different up close.
Yeah, it's so true. The filters are incredible. And one of the things that I see in my clinic is when people come in and they say to me, Ivana, my pores are really huge. Can you do something about that? And I'm looking at their skin and they have the most beautiful refined pores. And it's just texture. And people don't understand that it's normal to have texture in your skin and that there isn't this perfect skin. And in order to get that perfection, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. And I wish some of the bigger names like the Kardashians would sort of talk about what they're actually having done
and because how much it's costing them.
Yeah. And what the downtime was and were they hanging around with drains hanging off them to take the fluid away and had to hide themselves away for 10 days. All you see is the after effect and the impact.
Yeah.
I mean, each to their own, but people aren't getting the full story, I don't think.
No. And I think if the more we talk about this kind of thing, the more people will realise. I think Irish people in general, we still we're very much wanting to get these kind of treatments done. We're within Europe, we're one of the most, Botox is one of the most popular treatments. But at the same time, we're also kind of saying, oh, well, I'll do a little bit of Botox, but I would never try fillers or I'd never have a facelift. But that's going to change as time goes on and as facelifts and surgery and all that sort of thing gets easier and there's less downtime and the better results, we're all going to be doing it.
Because the horse has bolted, hasn't there? There's no point in us saying, you're grand the way you are. Don't be silly. A little water and a pond's cream and on you go. Like, we're living in a different world. But proceed with caution is sort of what you're saying and be sensible.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think as well, if you start off, and this is where we can bring our children into it, in the teenage years, if you get them wearing sunscreen and get them cleansing their skin properly and using a little bit of moisturiser, those three things, they're simple little steps that will aid you so well. If you carry them, those little steps out throughout your life, you will age so much better. And it's a better thing to do that and start looking after your skin at a younger age than having to fix everything once you're older.
Right. I'll get the 10-year-old with her beautiful renewing cells to get going on a little bit of moisturiser. Ivana, thank you so much. Ivana is Clinical Director at Ivana Breen Skin and Laser Clinic.
Thank you.
Alive and kicking. on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Farah Maiden of the Medical Skin Clinic in Donegal Town found life as a GP was becoming overwhelming for many reasons. She'd begun to give face treatments and decided to fully pivot to aesthetics doctor and set up the clinic. She invited me to try revolutionary resurfacing treatment, BBL and Secret Pro, and here's how I got on.
Okay, so Farah, you went from GP into aesthetics. So tell me a bit about that journey.
The decision I made to change over from general practice to aesthetics was when COVID ended, really. I found it incredibly stressful, especially during COVID. I mean, it was difficult being a GP in rural Ireland as well, with the lack of services available to us. I'd always been doing aesthetics on the side at part-time work, which I really, really enjoyed. Then I got quite unwell towards the end of it, you know, towards the end of my career as a GP. I got really severe colitis and, you know, that can be stress-induced as well. I've never had issues like that before, and that kind of made me take a break and sit back. I was actually not well enough to work anyway. So really, from then on, I kind of reassessed and, well, I needed, you know, income, and I started just doing aesthetics and actually really enjoyed it and decided then to open a space of my own. So that's how it all kind of kicked in.
So that would have been like Botox, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So initially, I would have trained in a lot of different areas of aesthetics, you know. Botox would be just one of them. Dermal fillers would be another one. So your facial contouring, your lip fillers, all of those things were my basic training. And I went on to train about skincare and thread lifts, lots of different aspects of aesthetic medicine. But mainly I had been doing, all I had time for was really Botox and fillers and skin boosters. Until I opened my clinic, where I can dedicate a lot of my time to treating the skin.
And how much has the amount of treatments available changed? I mean, I remember working on a current affairs program back when it was TV3 ahead of Virgin Media and talking about Botox and the rise of Botox and it being produced here in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a secretive thing. People got it, but they didn't really talk about it. Whereas now people are talking about it and there's a lot more available to them.
Absolutely. I mean, Botox is just one aspect in aesthetics. You know, it treats the muscles, so it kind of stops the wrinkles from happening. But with regards to what people are looking for now, I think it's more, there is a huge focus on skin health and skin quality and improving your skin texture and tone, for a more kind of natural, youthful look rather than the frozen face or the filled cheeks or the contoured jawline. That's what I find, you know, the changes, which is great. You know, I mean, there is a role for fillers and toxin in aesthetics, but I don't think that is the main thing we should be focusing on, you know. That's just my opinion. You know, I think there's a lot you can do with your skin by just using the right products, you know, and that's your first step, is getting the right products for your skin.
And people talk about growing old gracefully and just embracing nature and gravity and all of that. But it's not really about trying to reverse the clock all the time with your clients, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, it's not just anti-aging treatments that we have. We see a lot of acne patients or patients that suffer from rosacea, any kind of skin issues, really. I mean, we have a great machine, you know, the Cytons Joule 1064. Tell you a bit more about that. It's a lovely device to treat acne and rosacea, and it's so effective. And it's great having the tools in my clinic to treat all these different skin conditions. And that was something I really struggled with in general practice.
Yeah.
You know, not having the tools to help the patients and having to rely on referring them on to hospitals and specialists and things like that. So that's what I'm kind of focusing on, is trying to cater for, you know, as much as I can within my capabilities. Obviously, I don't want to go outside what I'm capable of doing. So I'm very conscious of that as well. But acne and rosacea, things like that, are so common. and affects so many people in Ireland and worldwide, really, but rosacea, particularly in Ireland.
Because people can be impacted if they have scarring or they have acne, and the fact that we can help treat this.
Yeah.
You can consider it a health issue.
Yeah, it is a health issue. I mean, like, if you have scarring on your face, you know, that might, like, say if you had an accident and you had a scar on your face from the accident, the scar on its own, like, looking at it every day can remind someone of the trauma that they had with, you know, to get that scar. And if you can treat it, it just really helps them kind of, you know, regain their self-confidence and things like that. Like, acne scarring is so, it can be treated, but you need the right treatment for it. And scarring, you know, it does impact everyone, you know, people's self-esteem with that. And if it can help them with it, why not?
So having a beginning, a middle and an end with people and their treatment here, you're finding that working a lot more for you than perhaps general practice.
Absolutely. I mean, for now, this time in my life, I have two small kids as well, which I need to kind of give my time to. This is something that is controllable. It's within my remit, you know, within my capabilities. And I love it. I love coming into work. I'm not stressed coming into work. And it's a nice atmosphere and people are happy and, you know, cheery. And it's great.
And are men coming more now for these sort of treatments?
We're starting to see a bit more men now than when I first started in aesthetics. You know, it would have been once a year before, but now we'd have a few a week, which is great. You know, men have skin needs too, you know, and it's great that they're looking after your skin.
Farah, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a million.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Aileen Slane had the rug of life pulled from under her in 2019 with a series of life-changing events. Forced to find a way out alone, she began to turn to wellness practices that had previously been bonus add-ons, and this time used them as anchors to steer her back on course. She joins me on the line now. Aileen, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Claire.
So, Aileen, it's safe to say you've been on quite the life adventure. How does it feel for you to be this side of it, to be in this chapter of your life, looking back at a tough experience and how you've turned it into a way of helping others?
It's an interesting one because it was so intense while I was going through it and incredibly painful. And a process I didn't particularly enjoy. But now in hindsight and having that little bit of distance and space from it, yeah, I feel like it transformed a lot of areas in my life. It really helped me come in contact with parts of me that I had used a lot of strategies to stay away from. And I feel I can show up in the world in a much more real way now. And you know, I do feel much more at ease with what's going on in my day-to-day life. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell people about 2019. Everyone looks back at 2020 as being a tough year, but you got in early. You got a head start in 2019.
I did. It was getting me prepared. So in 2019, the day before my birthday, I got diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. And triple negative breast cancer is an aggressive form of breast cancer. There's not a whole lot known around it. And it's a rare enough type of cancer to get. So I got diagnosed then with a tumor in my breast and also in my lymphatic system. So it had moved also into my lymph nodes. So that was the initial stage. And then probably about a month later, it was in October, I think, and my marriage then became apparent that it wasn't going to survive. So then separation became part of my conversation. And then November, I had an operation. I had surgery, which isn't the standard protocol of how triple negative is handled normally, but it was the way I wanted to do it. So I had surgery in November. And then I postponed chemotherapy till January. In January, I started chemotherapy. And at that stage, I realized that my marriage was broken down. it wasn't going to be healed. There wasn't reconciliation going to arrive from it. And so I had put in place family and friends to come. I lived in West Cork at this stage, and I had my son was 7. So I had put in place family and friends to come down and be with us while we were while I was doing chemo. And then in March, just before Paddy's Day, this probably around this time, you know, 2020, COVID arrived. So then that meant that nobody could come. And then I was pretty much on my own with my son then for that year while I was doing chemo. The person who I was married to at the time did stay, but we were kind of living separately under the same roof. And yeah, so I did a year of chemotherapy. And I suppose really what happened was because my back was pushed totally to the wall, I didn't have any resources to, you know, lean out into. I didn't have my friends. I didn't have my family nearby. And, you know, my relationship had ended and I had a small child to mind. So really, Claire, I think what happened to me was is that it was like, okay, I have to survive here. I have to get through this and I am going to pull on everything that I've ever used as a technique or a way to help me. And I had been living in India before, been away on this journey for 3 years, and I had a yoga teacher, so I have been teaching yoga. So I've been in this environment for like 2 decades. So that's what I leaned into. And really within that whole period of time, I suppose it was those skills, it was those ways of being that I think really helped me get through. I mean, I reached out to teachers while I was in this space. I reached out to Joseph Goldstein, who's in Insight Meditation in Barrie over in America. He was really helpful. I also reached out to Anita Marjani, who wrote Dying to Be Me, and she was also really helpful. So I was kind of like, okay, I need to call in any assistance that I can get. And that's kind of really what happened. And then I ended up with a teacher the following year. I ended up with another teacher called Jason Siff. And he used to be a Buddhist monk, and he's another meditation teacher. So I did a year intensively with him. And he kind of had quite a unique way of teaching mindfulness. So we worked together each week. And that was pretty transformational. So I think, you know, the whole situation created a space where I didn't have anything. I didn't have distraction. I didn't have other people to lean out onto. I didn't have, you know, social media, going out shopping, you know, whatever distractions we normally use to stay away from our difficulty. I didn't have any of them. And so I had to really just sit down and go, okay, I have to deal with this because this is the only way through.
And did you have a rock bottom moment? Did you have a moment of realization that you were on your own, and if anybody was going to dig deep, it was going to have to just be you? Or was it more of a gradual thing?
I think really at the very beginning, I was holding on by the skin of my teeth. I was just literally the fingernails on the edge of the cliff, really just hoping my chemos, I reached out, I got counselling. I mean, I needed it. And I think it was on a Thursday I used to have counselling. So I used to, you know, kind of make it through to about Monday in a good place, reasonable place. And really by Monday to Thursday, I was starting to feel the slip of, oh God, I'm not sure. The overwhelm of everything that was there was so big for me that I just felt I struggled in those 3 days between the Monday to the Thursday. And then I think it was multiple rock bottom moments, you know, like I think late at night because I was on a lot of steroids to stop the nausea. And, you know, you'd go to bed and I'd wake up an hour later and then that would be it. I'd be awake for the night. And so my son was sharing the bed with me. He wanted to sleep in with me. And so I think I used to just lie there looking at the ceiling, and I couldn't turn on the light because it would wake him up. And it was really, I think it was those night times, you know, really just lying there looking up at the ceiling thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do here. you know, this is a hard place. But then again, I downloaded loads of books and I started just listening to books and really started to, you know, use them to support myself. I just immersed myself in as much of this kind of this investigation into what was going on with me, really about looking at what was happening as opposed to trying to avoid it. I mean, I think we all know this. We spend our lives avoiding difficulty, whether it's, you know, any of the strategies that we use. So we very rarely sit down and really encounter the difficult situation that's happening in our life. So I used, I think these tools, I had to use them, otherwise, you know, it was going to be very difficult.
And it's stress, isn't it? I mean, we just try to numb the stress, whereas you took everything head on. And mindfulness, you said, was one of the biggest things. It's almost like there's these tools that we know of, and you can pick up one and say, oh, I don't know if that one is for me. What was it about mindfulness that made the difference?
Do you know what I think it was, Claire? I mean, I don't know about you and your, you know, familiarity with mindfulness, but I have been in India, you know, 20 years ago, and meditation and all that kind of area was very esoteric. And it was very much, you know, there was a teacher, a guru teaching you. And there was this real methodology thinking of that you create like no mind, that when you meditate, you're meant to come to a space of peace and that there should be no thinking. And that in itself creates a lot of difficulty, because the reality is that our mind thinks. But I suppose coming in contact with this teacher, Jason Siff, and his whole way of coming at mindfulness is that actually thinking's not the problem. So just allow your thoughts to be as they are. So this was a very new kind of take on how to be with your situation. He was like, no, sit, let your mind go to where it needs to go. Watch it with curiosity, bring compassion into it, really allow what's here to be here, and journal it. And so I used to do this every day. I'd journal it, and then he'd read it, and we'd have meetings every week. But I think that was fundamentally the biggest change, was the fact that this allowed anything to be here. I wasn't trying to cultivate a specific type. So I think, you know, trying to cultivate a state of not thinking in that space was not possible.
And it's that shoving away. There seems to be a theme here that you're saying that many of us go through, that we just push things away. And when we're trying to meditate or be mindful, we're still trying to push the thoughts away. Whereas instead, you just really sat, wrote about, and then discussed everything that was coming up for you. What happens in that process? Is there a freedom? Do you keep dealing with the same thing for certain weeks, or by giving it that attention and shining the light in it, does it sort of dissolve its power? Is it different for different sections of what you're going through?
I think it's everything you've just pointed towards. But I think really within that situation, I think personally, my experience is that the way that I was brought up is that I was brought up to deal with difficulty and pain with distraction. So to turn away from it, not to look at it. So, you know, think about it, a kid falls and hurts their knee. You're like, oh, here, have a bar of chocolate. You know, you're distracting with something. So that had been my strategy for a period of time. And then this one totally changed it. So it was now, can I sit and can I build my capacity to actually hold difficulty as well as pleasant experiences? Can I hold the unpleasant experience? And the amazing thing about it is that a huge part of it is you kind of change your language. So as opposed to looking at it in a very rigid binary kind of way, like, oh, this is the reason why I'm feeling like this, and kind of ticking a box, it's much more like you're bringing space around it and you're like, oh, that's interesting. I can see there I'm really talking quite negatively towards myself, or I'm being pretty harsh on myself there. That's interesting. I wonder why I'm doing that. So there's much more interest, much more curiosity, much more softness around it. And then alongside of that is a huge amount of compassion. So you're just like, I might see this idea coming up within me, and then there might be a huge amount of judgment around it about how I'd failed as a human, or whatever the thought was, you know, that look what I'm actually doing, look at where I am, look at what I'm actually getting myself into, you know, so there's judgment there. And so then there's just real compassion towards that, noticing, oh, look, I'm really judging myself here as well. And can I be much more open towards that? And that was interesting because I found that really hard. I found that really hard to be compassionate towards myself. And I would utter the words because Jason had kind of told me, this is the way you deal with this. And it felt very rote, like I was doing it as a kind of just saying the words. But to be honest with you, they started to have impact. And the most amazing thing was, is that the minute I would sit down with difficulty, particularly in that really intense period of time, or even now when I do it, it does dissipate it. I don't sit down with the intention of it to dissipate it, because that's another little bit of a rabbit hole that you can get into. You're doing it now again to achieve something. But when I do sit down with this and start to get familiar with it, yeah, the energy seems to, you know, it softens, it dissolves from it. It may not go away, but my relationship is very different with us. And that's incredible.
And I was stunned when I first read the stat that we have anywhere between 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day, and the majority of them are negative. And we don't even know, we don't even realize. And I suppose by bringing awareness, we're beginning to control our thoughts a little rather than letting them control us. And I think it is a really powerful space to be in. And you're now at a space, Aileen, where you are ready to help others. You want to be the person that people reach out to in the dark, staring at the ceiling. And you're now offering a mindfulness course yourself and launching a podcast. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I suppose with the cancer diagnosis, within the first 3 years of triple negative, it's the most likely for it to reoccur. And I reached my 3 years in August last year. So it's been something that's been hugely important for me throughout my whole life. And I just really felt that this was the time to bring this forward. I really want to bring this forward because it was so transformational for me. And I really wanted to make it that it's actually not this mystical idea of, you know, that you need to go off to the forest or a cave and meditate for 7 years in silence to get the results from this practice. This practice is really tangible. It's like open and available for everybody. And it's so incredibly powerful. So yeah, I kind of wanted to make it just that it was real and that it was available for everyone in every walk of life. You know, and that we don't need to feel at war with ourselves. We don't need to feel that we've got this internal narrative going on that's, you know, going to sneak up at us during the night and have us awake for 4 hours with, you know, whatever it is, that we can actually really make peace with this. And personally, I kind of feel, you know, the work is here with ourselves. And if we start here, and if we actually listen to ourselves, and if we bring kindness towards ourselves and compassion towards ourselves, it just naturally ripples out into the relationships around you and into the world around you. So, you know, really the work we do in ourselves, we do it for the whole world. And I just think that it's just so powerful that I'm really driven, I think, now to bring this out there. Maybe nobody wants to listen, but I've decided to bring it out there. And I have a podcast that I'm creating. It has all my, it doesn't have all my, it has a section of meditations there, but also explanations around the meditations. Because it's even this whole idea of the breath. You know, lots of people think, well, I've got to focus on my breath. But, you know, you don't have to focus on your breath. The breath is just a point of concentration. So it can be your hands. It could be the sounds around you. It could be your feet. It doesn't have to be the breath. It's just, it's with us all the time. So it's a handy one to use. That's basically really why it's picked. So it has those things there. And I always find a really helpful question. The first question I always ask when I teach a mindfulness course is like, what do you think it is? Like we all have these words that we're using in this arena around meditation and mindfulness. But sometimes we don't actually really know what they mean to us. And so really just stopping and actually thinking, okay, what do I think mindfulness is, and write down what it is. And then also ask yourself, like, what do you expect mindfulness to bring for you? Because you may have a whole set of expectations that you haven't even really identified. Like, you might think you're never going to think again and you're going to have harmonious relationships forever with everybody around you. And, you know, you mightn't actually know that that's what you're expecting. So if it doesn't happen, you're going to think, oh, that didn't work for me. So I have all those kind of little talks and those meditations. They're there on my podcast, which is called The Journey Home with Aileen Slane. And then I've also started one with Keith Welch. And that's where we are kind of trying to dispel these, I suppose, jargon around this whole area, and just really try to make it available for everybody. I think that's really what I would love to be able to do, is that everybody can see that it's really simple techniques that we can use and that they can make big impacts in our day-to-day lives.
And, you know, I think a podcast is a great place for people, like, you stuck your headphones in and downloaded books to introduce people to a new way of thinking, or shift a mindset, or awaken something. But then a course, I think, is really positive because there's an accountability there, because often we know the things that we could be doing or should be doing, even though I hate the word should. And yet we often don't get round to them because we're busy, we're tired, or we're at a low ebb. So to have somebody to show up to, like you did with Jeffrey Sims, that's where the real magic can happen, when you have somebody that you have to show up for, and it turns up you're showing up for yourself. Where can people find you, Aileen?
So I have a website, aileenslane.com. So everything that I do is there. My podcast is the Journey Home podcast. And the one I'm doing with Keith is called Be Now Here.
Well, I'm delighted that you had that amazing anniversary, that you passed through those 3 years, that you came through that tough time and are ready to share your light with other people. Aileen Slane, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a million, Claire. It's a pleasure to be here.
So that's it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna, Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.
A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.